There we go. Good afternoon. It's March 15th, 2017. We're going to open up the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. Colleagues, today we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 5535, Department of Revenue. And we've got a couple areas we're going to be talking about, and Administrative Services Division and then Information Technology Services. So that's on the agenda for today. But why don't we start off with an update, John, on what we need to know.
Okay. Mr. Co-Chairs and members of the subcommittee, I need to correct one thing for the record. Yesterday at the close of the hearing, I mistakenly said that we would have public testimony today, and all the days are running together, but I was in error. Tomorrow was public testimony, and there's a couple follow-up items, too. The agency has prepared written responses to questions from Monday, and those were just recently posted to OLIS by Michael. And there was a question about kind of the broad scope of the marijuana program. Teresa McHugh in our office put together a brief on the status of the marijuana programs. It was published in April, so there's a little bit more updated information, but it serves as a good basis for the statutory history of the program and how it relates to the medical marijuana program, the agencies involved, and other items. So Michael sent that link out by email earlier this afternoon, and so you should have that available as a good resource, and we can discuss more questions about it. You'll hear more about it as we kind of move through more aspects of the budget with phase two and work sessions, but that's a good background. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Perfect. Thank you, John. All right, colleagues, why don't we begin? Welcome. The floor is all yours. If you could just introduce yourself for the record, we'll turn it over to you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sean Waite. I'm the administrator of Administrative Services Division for the Department of Revenue.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Gary Johnson. I am the Chief Information Officer for our Department of Revenue.
Okay, so we're going to start with today's agenda. We are splitting this up a little bit differently. So in the next slide, I will talk about ASD as a division, and ITS falls underneath the ASD umbrella. But what Gary and I have discussed is that we both have some kind of critical issues that we want to bring forward, and we don't want ITS to kind of just fall under the umbrella and not focus specifically on some of the issues that we need to discuss. So today I will be presenting on finance, the processing center modernization project, and the payment center, which is the cash transaction unit that we discussed a little bit yesterday. So here we have the organizational chart for the Administrative Services Division. The goal of ASD is to establish and maintain an exceptional level of customer service by meeting our customers' expectations in terms of delivery of services and performance. And one thing that I'd like to clarify is when we talk about customers, customers are anybody we come into contact with. It could be DOR, it could be another state agency, it could be county, it could be you guys. It is really anybody that we provide services to. So in this org chart, you will see, again, the Administrative Services Division umbrella. On the left-hand side, you will see my position as the administrator of ASD, and then underneath that, I directly supervise the processing center, which I will go into detail about what they do, and also budget and finance, which includes payroll and procurement functions as well. On the right-hand side, you'll see Gary's position as the agency CIO, and then he also supervises the deputy CIO. But underneath that deputy, there are multiple units within ITS that Gary will discuss. We also share an executive assistant. This person provides personnel management support, scheduling, and other support as needed by the entire division. So I will jump right in into the finance section. So this section really focuses on the entire, like I was saying, accounting, budget, payroll, and procurement. We have 16 positions and 16 FTE. Our current budget is 8.25 million general fund, and then a section of other fund of 2.54 million. So I want to clarify a little bit on the other fund component. So we have a cost allocation plan. So there is a portion of our personal services costs and S&S that get allocated out to the program areas. That percentage is about 2.4%. And so that percentage actually hits business division, the property tax division, and also personal income tax division. And this is to help provide the overhead costs associated with supporting those business types. So there is also one thing that's a little bit unique on the other fund funding source for some of these positions. So 0.5 of a position that's dedicated in our budget section is actually funded with bond funding through the CSR project. This person also provides budget support for the PVS project, although that person is not funded with bond funded through PVS. We also have 0.25 out of accountant position that provides support for the marijuana retail tax program. And that 0.25 is funded with the other funds from that program. This position provides reconciliation, some financial statement support, and then also when we talk about monitoring the expenditures, payments back to OLCC, this position monitors that as well. So some of the functions that the accounting team does, and also our budget team. So our budget team focuses on budget development and execution, and then also any special reports that we ask from them. The accountants generate financial statements that are used by our research folks that support forecast efforts. So it is really critical that our accountants do due diligence to make sure that information is accurate, because it could impact how the forecast comes out. We also make sure that our budget team works closely with our accountants on the financial statements to make sure that actuals and revenues are hitting like they're supposed to. So it's really a team effort within that group. We also we also conduct about $11.5 million or billion dollars annually on transfers and distributions. Those transfers and distributions are really to our county partners, other state agencies, and you'll see this within the budget development process when you look at the different distributions that revenue makes. We distribute money to hundreds of different people, individuals. So I also want to talk about, there's a couple components of GenTax and Rollout 4. We're very excited for Rollout 4 in finance. This is heavily focused on finance activities. Right now, when I talk about our distributions and transfers, we manually calculate those using spreadsheets and formulas embedded in the spreadsheets, and then we send them off to program, program reviews, they send them back, and then we manually enter that information into the state financial system. So it's a lot of manual effort. Rollout 4 is gonna automate a lot of these distributions, so we're very excited about the efficiencies that we're gonna gain there. So finance is very heavily involved in doing development and testing and training for Rollout 4. So this is pretty exciting for us. The team also provides reconciliation of our expenditures for our bond reimbursable expenses. And so they work very closely with DAS Capital Finance, with the CSR project, and now also the PVS, because we're just approved bond sale in February. And so they make sure that those expenses are allowable under the bond rules. We're very confident with the feedback that we're getting from DAS Capital Finance that we will pass an audit and not have any findings at this point, so we're pretty excited. But leading into the next one, we're not so excited. So the Secretary of State, the last couple of years, we've had some pretty significant audit findings. And this is a result of a couple of different things. So one of the audit findings that's continued is the timeliness of reconciliations of our cash accounts. And then the other one is year-end entries during year-end close activities that we have made some errors.
So let me ask a question on that really quick, because I want to tee this up correctly.
Okay.
Who was Secretary of the State when those reviews were occurring?
So I don't know.
It would have been the former secretary.
The former, it's not so Secretary Richardson.
Okay, I just wanted to cue that up.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, it was not Secretary Richardson.
Okay, thank you.
So what these audit findings really resulted from for a couple different reasons. So while Gentex has created a lot of efficiencies for our agency and for finance as well, this has been pretty intensive work for my accounting team. The accounting team's a very small team. We only have about six positions associated with that group right now because we do have some positions dedicated to work specifically on CSR. And so what has happened is the workload has been extremely high for that group. When we do testing, training, data conversion, all that activity usually happens in mid to late summer into early fall. We are in the middle of year-end close at that point. So we really have competing priorities. And the finance section has done a fabulous job of trying to manage those competing priorities. But again, there are going to be some things that fall through the cracks. So what we have done to mitigate this moving forward is that we have hired an accountant for retiree that is going to help with getting reconciliations caught up and completed timely. We also asked this person to provide some additional training to our staff for year-end close activities. Another thing that has happened is 75% of our accounting staff has turned over in the last couple years. And that has to do with retirements and also promotional opportunities for our team members. So I feel fairly confident that moving forward, we're going to be able to mitigate any future audit findings. So finance procurement. So the Department of Revenue's procurement unit conducts procurements that are under $150,000. Anything $150,000 and over is completed by DAS Procurement Services. DOR does not have delegated authority to complete procurements $150,000 and over. However, with that said, we have completed 618 contracts and agreements that we manage within DOR. This includes any agreements. So we have the budgetary authority to do distributions and transfers to counties and our sister agencies, but we also have to have the vehicle, which is the agreements in place. Some of these contracts also include the collection, outside collections that we talked about earlier, I think day one or two. And then also we have banking contracts that we manage. I want to point out that this group has realized a significant increase in workload. And this is due to the implementation of the marijuana tax program. So just in the last couple months, we have entered into 67 agreements with localities for the 3%. We have also had to develop contracts for services and supplies associated with a cash transaction unit, and also security contracts with Oregon State Police. So I also want to talk about So House Bill 2375 is a bill that was passed in the 2015 regular session. This is associated with contract administration. And while DAS is taking the lead on providing training and tools for agencies to use, our agency actually has kind of taken a lead role in providing some of the contract administration training and providing recommendations back to DAS. So we are very actively participating in statewide activities. It's very important to us that our contract administrators are trained. They know what deliverables are, how to review an invoice, and to hold vendors accountable to what they've promised.
Can we take a moment and go back to, I believe it's slide number two. I think it's slide number two. Right there. So our budget and finance person position is vacant. But then when I read the Secretary of State audit, it talks about that there's significant deficiencies in internal controls that they consider to be significant. And the first one is performing cash reconciliation on a regular and timely basis.
Mm-hmm.
Who should be doing that within that flow chart?
So, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, so I'm just going to be honest. I've been doing two jobs for the last year or so. So that budget and finance vacant position is actually our finance manager that oversees our accounting manager. So the accounting unit with the accounting manager, they're the ones that are actually doing the reconciliation work.
Okay. And you and I've had an opportunity to work together for several years, and I have a high level of faith in you. So I want you to know that.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. So I know this isn't directed in any way at any particular person. How long have those positions been vacant?
So that position in particular has been vacant since December of 2015.
Okay. So one of the issues, committee, that's become apparent through the LFO process, through John's review, is that there's a handful of vacant positions that have been vacant for a significant period of time. And so part of what I think this committee needs to understand is how are we going to ensure that findings such as those that occurred in the audit, and knowing that we have vacant positions that have been vacant for a significant period of time, who could be performing these functions, gets taken care of.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, so I am in the process of doing a recruitment for the finance manager position. I have gone out a couple different times to recruit for that position, and it ended up in a failed recruitment process.
Is there something this committee, and I want you to know, Madam Director, I'm looking through these two at you. I want you to know we're here to help, okay? And so is there something this committee can be doing to assist to get those positions filled to make sure that these issues are getting resolved?
I can answer.
Please do.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, there are certain positions within the finance arena that are very difficult to fill and to find qualified people. This specific position, for example, oversees multiple disciplines that it's very rare to find somebody that has that experience, especially state experience, to cover procurement, accounting, budget, and payroll. So that has been a challenge. And then also when you look at like our accountant series, the state has really struggled to try and find qualified candidates to come in and fill those roles. It's really about we need to focus on succession planning, training, and also how do we integrate people from maybe the private sector and make it attractive for them to come to state government.
So will you folks make a mark of on this issue? And John, I know you're watching this issue close. When we get into round two of our conversations, I really think you folks need to have a detailed plan for us of how we're going to address these Secretary of State audit issues as it relates also to the vacancies that could be helping to get these issues resolved.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Yeah.
Thank you. Let's continue.
Okay. So I was on procurement. So I explained what we have done with House Bill 2375. Want to move on to our procurement and contract specialists are all certified. So they either have the state certification or a certification at the national level. And this, the reason they aren't certified is because we make sure that they receive the training. So one of the KPMs for the agency, KPM 3, relates to employees having 20 hours of training annually. We ensure that these procurement folks receive that training to make sure that they stay certified, that they stay up to speed with the current procurement rules. The vision that we have for procurement is to move far beyond the traditional primary role of procurement of just buying a good and service. We want to understand what the business needs are. We want to make sure that we're getting the services at the right price and also the right source and the right specifications to meet the agency's needs internally. So with this training that they receive, not just through the DAS Procurement Services training, but also NASPO and other nationwide procurement training efforts, we ensure that we provide that integrity and process. Also, I want to talk about, this is another initiative that actually my procurement manager has taken the lead on. So Senate Bill 675, there is a section within there, and let me back up a little bit. This bill passed regular session in 2015. There is a section within this bill that says that the state will ensure that any contractor that is proposing or bidding on a solicitation, that they will be in tax compliance. So my procurement manager has taken the lead and worked with and is working with DAS Procurement Services, with DOJ, and many other agencies throughout the state, and looking at ORPIN and seeing how we can do a data match effort and identify those vendors that are truly not in tax compliance. So we want to make sure we do due diligence on this, because we don't want to call out a vendor and say you're not in tax compliance when it could truly be a timing issue with payroll withholding or something like that. So we envision that within the next probably 6 months, we will have the data match refined, and within a year, we can get this implemented and in place. So next, the processing center. So we have 134 positions, 104.69 FTE. And I want to talk a little bit about the significant difference between the position count and the FTE count. The difference there is really associated with the budgeted seasonal positions. So we hire about 95 seasonals to work through the tax processing season. We bring them on in a phased approach. So we start bringing them on in February, and they will continue working through mid to end of May to get us through tax processing season. So that's the variance you're seeing there. And the funding, $12.63 million in general fund, and then the $2.67 million in other fund. Again, the other fund split, part of that is attributed to the cost allocation plan that I kind of discussed earlier. There is a percentage of personal services and S&S that program areas cover for us for the overhead piece. What's unique about the processing center is this is where the cash transaction unit is placed. And so there are 9 positions that are solely funded by marijuana tax revenue, and that's reflected within that sliver of other fund.
Let me ask you really quick, and if this was discussed in the last 2 days, I apologize. Have we had an opportunity to, and I don't know a better way of saying it, but kind of clean up the handling of cash? One of the issues that we heard was having to deal with marijuana cash can be oily, smelly, stinky. How are we working to protect our employees on that?
So there are some safety measures. So ventilation is key, of course, because there is an odor that Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there is an odor that comes off the cache, and so there is a very robust ventilation system in the area that they're working in. They also, some of them wear masks even to protect the their breathing. They also wear the rubber gloves that you see like in a doctor's office or something like that. So we do put some protections in place for them.
Okay, thank you.
Two questions, Mr. Chair.
Yeah,
first of all, are there a lot of snacks available there?
We serve pizza every day.
and perhaps on a more serious note, I'm interested in people from around the state making these payments to us. Are they all showing up in person with a pile of money, or are we have a delivery or a pickup service? How are people paying these taxes?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Gomberg, they are actually coming to revenue and making those payments. We do not have a pickup system. The only system that we have for picking up, again, is our armored card that delivers our deposits to the bank, and that's for all tax programs. But taxpayers are coming in. We do have a very small percentage that have bank accounts that are able to submit checks. We did have a little hiccup with some ACH stuff, but we did fix that. But generally, yeah, it's they're coming in with cash.
Yeah, please.
Follow up. Forgive me for being paranoid. So, have there been any anything unusual that's happened with people carrying this much money around with them? Have you sensed the need for increased security? Have you had people that have indicated they've had problems because they're carrying money around like this?
So, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Gomberg, so we actually have increased our security. And when I talk about our permanent solution, there will be more information about what we're doing for the physical location. But we have hired some retired Oregon State police officers, so we have a couple on duty. We have not had one instance. And really, the most concern is how much information we put out there that could impact the retail business itself in their location. Mm-hmm. We have a very secure setting, and so we've had no instance. The majority of any sort of concern is really the media coverage, and we've been able to manage that through our communications division.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No, those excellent questions. Those are questions we've had in the previous biennium, being worried for our worker safety. Yeah. Please continue.
Okay. So this next slide, I'm just going to do a very quick high-level overview of each of the units that are within the processing center, because that will help lead the foundation for my next slide, which talks about the pipeline and the future state of the processing center. So we have mail processing. And mail processing, they go and pick up the mail from the post office every day, bring it back, sort it, and start the distribution process. So there's 2.3 million pieces of mail that goes through the mail processing center annually. So that's pretty impressive. From there, the correspondence will be sent onto the program area, or a return will be sent to the information transcription unit, which we call ITU because it's kind of a mouthful to say. But they process 400,000 paper and 2D returns annually. And what this team actually does is they manually enter return information into our systems. We also have the banking and miscellaneous cash, EFT, so our electronic funds transfer goes through this unit. We also, the banking unit receives our checks, $1.9 million payments in the form of checks totaling $3 billion went through the banking unit this last year. And also miscellaneous cash, this is kind of a more complex section of this unit. And when somebody sends in a payment that could be for multiple different return types, they're able to take that payment and kind of split it out to apply it to the correct return. And they do some other activities, but again, just kind of a high level overview of that. We have the error resolution unit. And what happens there is when a return leaves ITU and there's a mistake in there, like it could be a mismatch ID number with a name or a transposed number, it goes through that unit and they correct those mistakes prior to them being moved onto the program. So on average, they work about 130,000 items annually. So they're pretty busy as well. We also have our files unit. So this is literally a unit that houses all of our paper files. So we have approximately 11.5 million returns that are stored within the Department of Revenue. We also image about 150,000 paper returns per year. And this unit also, you know, you think about the 11.5 million files that they're managing, they also track the retention schedule. So that could be anywhere from 4 to 10 years. So they have their work cut out for them in keeping track of all those files and the retention.
How do we measure quality on these transactions for accuracy? Are we 99.9% accurate on these transactions? Are we 50%?
Oh, no, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. So we do measure our accuracy. And I have to say last year was a little rough on us because we kind of went into a contingency planning where we were doing direct keying into Gentax. And we have modified some screens, so we are better now. But
when you say direct keying, you mean 10 key?
Yeah. Basically 10 key, yeah. Okay. Gentax was never meant to be a data entry system. And so last year we experienced a lot of mistakes. So it was about 75% accuracy. I have to say now we have a new screen in place and we're up in the low 90s at this point.
What did we tell the 25% of the taxpayers who had inaccurate information?
Well, so...
Because, I mean, I'm assuming if it's 10 keyed in and 75% is good and 25% is bad, at some point we have to correct the 25%.
And we do, and that's what the error resolution group does. So that's kind of there's QA processes, quality control, quality assurances processes all through the processing center. So all the errors are really resolved prior to getting to the program areas for processing their piece of it.
One of the things I heard from CPAs was that through human error, which is natural, doesn't matter whether it's Department of Revenue or other places, that there's nominal issues that could be resolved very quickly that mm-hmm. we're having to resolve through paper processes and lengthier than normal processes. And one of the things that I think this committee ought to be thinking about is there a way for tax preparers and CPAs to be able to have a direct line to get a hold of the Department of Revenue and say, hey, I think this is incorrect on line number mm-hmm. 17. Can we just get this rectified? And through professional to professional, be able to expedite those processes. And so just know, committee, at some point we may have a conversation on that. Anyway, please go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So then we have the cash transaction unit. Like I said before, they process all the cash that comes into the agency, and they also schedule appointments for our marijuana retail taxpayers. We also have the operations unit. This is a key unit that actually helps with season up activities. And when I refer to season up activities, that is really preparing for tax season. So they work with other divisions or program areas to ensure our forms are up to date. They work with vendors to ensure their systems can communicate with ours, like Intuit, H&R Block, those types of places. So, okay, so this slide actually goes into the pipeline. I'm going to go over this pretty quickly. So
we got a question here. Yeah. Representative Gomberg.
Thank you. I'm going to go back to a processing question because you talked to us about cash and you talked to us about checks. You didn't talk to us about the other option, which the co-chair knows is one of my favorite subjects, and that's credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine that the processing department also handles credit card payments.
Yes. So, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Gomberg, that is part of like our EFT. So we do have a credit card processing through NIC USA. They're our third party. And so we do manage the credit cards through the banking unit.
And a follow-up then. My memory is, and correct me if my memory is faulty, that we're charging taxpayers a 2.25% convenience fee when they pay their taxes with a credit card. But the rate that the state of Oregon is getting from our bank and our processors is about 1.8%. So what happens to that roughly half an extra percent that we're collecting from taxpayers that we don't pay out?
So, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, Representative Gomberg, I'm not sure, so I'm going to have to get back to you on that.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
So,
I don't know if we'll have to check with the Department of Administrative Services on that one. Do you know how that works, John?
No, but it's actually, Mr. Co-Chair and member of the committee, maybe the state treasury has been also following this, so how about we'll do some more global follow-up if that's okay.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. So I'm going to speed this up a little bit so my friend Gary has some time. So the processing center receives the mail. They distribute it to the program area. They send payments into the processing center baking unit. It goes to the ITU unit for keying. It could error out. And then the error resolution team then will correct any errors. The information is then extracted into Gentax, and then program areas can now access the information and start working it. So that's what we call the pipeline process. So one piece of paper goes through all of these circles, and 90% of that's manual at this point for the processing center. So the processing center's future is, as you will see on the left-hand side, there's checks, returns, and then the little envelopes, just correspondence that comes in. Ideally, what we would like to have happen is to be able to image all this, get it into an image, do a QC on it or a QA, destroy the paper, and then have that electronic image, the record on file. Then the information is automated. It is sent into Gentax automatically. Program immediately has access to any documents associated with a return or correspondence. So that's the future state. And I want to talk a little bit about we tried to get there. So back in 2014, the processing center did some analysis and realized that our PIT or our personal income tax systems are no longer supported. Microsoft no longer supports the platform that they run on. We also realized that our CORP systems are unsupported. And then also our remittance process and banking for our checks has about a 5-year useful life left. And there is one person in the entire state of Oregon that can provide maintenance support for this equipment. This equipment is not even manufactured anymore. So I'm here to say that it is not a matter of if these systems will fail, it is a matter of when. And so we, back in 2014, we started doing an RFP process. We contracted with a vendor. We purchased 2 IBM L scanners that we're currently using today. However, by April of 2016, we realized that the vendor was not going to be able to provide the software that we needed to be successful. So we ended up terminating the contract for convenience and kind of pulled back, put contingency plans in place in order to get through last tax season. We had to hire additional seasonal staff. We also had program area staff helping us key entries. Processing time was much, much slower. So as you heard Joanne Martin talk about on Monday, that there were reasons why season was a little bit slower. I'm here to say that the processing center was a key factor in that. And I'm going to tell you that this season is much, much better. We are on track this season. So anyway, this aligns, though, to the future state.
So really quick, go ahead, Representative, then I'll ask my question. You go first, sir.
Well, okay, so I heard you say that that we're scanning in the paper documents and then we're destroying the paper documents. And I'm sure that we don't have a shredder next to each scanning machine, and I haven't seen a big bin out behind the revenue department where there's a bunch of tax returns piled up. So tell me what the process is for this sensitive personal information, and how do we go about destroying paper copies of my tax returns?
So, Co-Chair Smith, Representative Gomberg, members of the committee, we're not scanning them yet. And we do have specific IRS guidelines that we have to follow when we shred, and it literally is down to like an eighth or 5/8 of an inch that we can shred them. And so we will approach that as we start looking at imaging more documents. If we get into the future state of when we get a paper return, we're able just to image it and use that as the file for record.
I'll follow up next biennium. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, I've got to ask the question. So where do we store tax returns?
Literally, they are all stored within the Department of Revenue on the fifth floor. That's the 11.5 million.
Don't work on the fourth floor.
In the case of the size. Okay, but John was just sharing 80% of them are submitted electronically.
Right, yes, exactly. So, okay. Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, yeah, I mean, people are submitting their returns electronically as well, like through TurboTax or H&R Block, stuff like that. Not all of the returns we get are paper, definitely.
But
a lot of them are electronic.
But when it comes in paper, it gets its own little file.
It's in its own world, yes.
Okay. Let me ask another question. And I understand the challenges that you've had to go through over the last couple of years. Well, let me hold back on my question. Okay, let's continue. Let's continue for now.
Okay.
I'll ask it later.
So I want to get to lessons learned. So one of the things that we realized on the Processing Center Lifecycle Project is that we did not have the Office of the State CIO involved in any oversight activities. We also didn't have agency-wide participation, so we were only focused on what the Processing Center was doing and what they needed and not what program areas within the agency needed. We should have conducted a request for information so that we knew what options were out there and if the requirements that we wanted could actually be met by vendors, and also to get a cost estimate of what the solution would cost. We should have had a better supporting business case and supporting documentation, and at that point we also didn't have an agency governance structure in place. So now we have rebranded the project. It is no longer the Processing Center Lifecycle Project. It is now the Processing Center Modernization Project. We have developed a business case that has been submitted to the OSCIO. We also developed the project management plan along with several other documents. We are working closely with OSCIO through this process, and they are providing a lot of oversight. We have passed Stage Gate 1, and we are in the process of working on Stage Gate 2 and hope to submit for that soon. We have finished a request for information. 8 vendors provided estimated costs. The estimated solution is $1.5 million. You'll see $1.7 million here, but really $200,000 of that is for the next bullet, the limited duration staff that we need for the business analysts for this project. The risks of not doing this project, like I said, there'll be more errors in return processing. It will take us significantly longer to process returns. Again, we are working with outdated and unsupported software, so we are at a significant risk. Also, one of the risks that are associated with this is that we need to ensure that the current staffing level that we have in operations and in our program areas that are supporting this project are in place to ensure that we have adequate staffing to support implementation. So then real quick on the payment center. So this is where our cash transaction unit is moving, and that will be on the first floor. This unit will not only take marijuana retail tax payments, but it's also going to take other types of payments. Withholding could be personal income tax, whatever payments a taxpayer wants to pay at the Salem building, they can pay. This will provide a secure environment. There will be protective glass. There's going to be steel in the walls. There's multiple security measures that have been taken to ensure that any staff or taxpayer that comes in will be safe when they're making their deposit. I do want to say that we do have a bid out on the street. It closes next week. We are anticipating that the costs for the permanent solution are going to be significantly higher than what was approved in the 2015 regular session. This is due to construction inflationary costs. So we will be talking about that a little bit more.
Yeah, Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair, thank you so much. You probably already answered this question, but I'm curious, you know, the state of marijuana, you know, all the money that's coming in the form of tax revenue and things like that, how does that money, or does that money circulate back into the community? How's that done? I mean, I'm not quite sure I understand whether or not we have a financial institution that's accepting the money based off of federal issues and stuff. You know, we know FDIC is a problem with that. I think the credit unions have their own insurer. How is that working? I don't quite understand. How does that work?
So, Co-Chair Smith, Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee, I would prefer to defer that question offline. We do have a mechanism to do that, but I prefer that we could defer that offline if possible.
Oh, covert, black ops. Okay.
did not say that. So we do anticipate construction being complete October 2017.
Can we go back to that slide really quick?
You bet.
Do you recall what you shared, or you or the previous director shared with this committee on to when it would be completed? I see that it's going to be completed in October 2017. I remember having this conversation a couple years ago.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, it was the goal to have it done by the end of this biennium. And so there has been some delay in making that happen as far as...
Can you elaborate on what those were?
So we really had an issue with the architecture of the existing building, and also trying to figure out, so we have HVAC issues. We have so many issues about, do we keep it on at DOR? Do we move it off-site? There were multiple conversations because of the complexity of what the construction could be. And so that took a little while to vet out as far as, are we going to go into like a bank environment, like a U.S. bank type building off-site, or are we going to stay with DOR? So that was really the delay.
Who provided us the counsel on the decision we ultimately ended up with?
We hired, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, I believe we hired a private third party, but I need to double check on that and get back to you.
And following up on that, what I'd be interested in knowing is did the Department of Administrative Services and their building management folks, did they weigh in and help in this decision making?
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, yes, they did.
They did, okay. And then the last question is this, and I don't expect you have the numbers right now, but can we get what the increase in costs will be?
So, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, once we get the bid estimates back, we'll share that with you. So when I come back in April, I'll be able to share that information with you.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. Thank you.
And with that, I turn it over to Gary Johnson.
All right. Thank you. So my intent here today is to provide you with just a high-level overview of revenues, ITS, or information technology services, some of the divisions and services we support, and some of the things we're working on. Excuse me. I'd also like to spend a little time talking about how we're governed, and then provide you with a quick overview of or status update on some of the agency-wide efforts we're working on. So I know you received information from Director Ray and my peers responsible for some of these areas, so I won't go into detail on them. But in terms of who and what we support, ITS is an organization of 69 professional FTE that support roughly 1,000 users across four divisions, the director's office, our PMO, and five field locations that are spread across the state. So Ms. Waite just provided you a very comprehensive overview of ASD's budget, so I won't go into a lot of detail here other than just to portion out ITS's part in that. And we have a biennial budget of $23.7 million. And you can see the majority of that is in personal services. So as I mentioned, ITS is an organization of 69 FTE. Six of those positions are actually manager positions. We're functionally aligned across five units. I report to the director's office, as Ms. Waite pointed out, and I am a voting member of the executive team. And I believe this has a lot of significance because it really speaks to the value that DOR puts on technology and its ability to create efficiencies and solve business problems. I have two direct reports. I have the deputy CIO and our technical architect. And as a result of Executive Order 1613, I have a dotted line authority into our information security office.
Can we go back a slide?
Sure.
Application services.
Yes.
How long have they been without a manager?
About 3 weeks, co-chair.
Cool, thank you.
So this is my posterity slide. There's a lot of technical information on here, but I think it nicely conveys our evolution over time in terms of our maturing and the services we're offering and the required balancing act that we have to perform every day. And by balancing act, what I mean is our value as a back office support function really comes in twofold. Our ability, our operational stability for the products and the programs we support, as well as our ability to offer new tools to make the business, our partners, run either better, faster, or cheaper. So to the extent that we can, we want to keep pace with evolving technologies industry best practices. But I think most people in this room would agree that the state is not really structured to incur the risk with bleeding edge technologies. So that's really what I'm talking about when I talk about a balancing act. And for the most part, I think we've been able to achieve that. Although there have been instances, there are instances, in fact, that where we haven't been able to keep pace with evolving technologies and we haven't been able to adapt as quickly as we'd like. And I'll get to that more in a minute, if you allow me. So this is some of the other stuff we're adding to our portfolio. Most of these are currently underway and will span into next biennium. Some of them we're hoping to get underway a little sooner. For instance, Sean's processing center effort. So the last two slides were really about outcomes or the what. What I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about right now is the how, and specifically how we position ourselves for success in a governmental support organization. So what you're looking at here is a high-level representation of our Microsoft roadmap. We have a lot of roadmaps. We have a strategic plan. Our roadmaps support our strategic plan. Our strategic plan ultimately supports our agency's business mission, values, and objectives. These tools help me facilitate investment conversations with the leadership team. They help my team improve in planning and projects for resources. And they generally just help us drive business and be more planful, more proactive, and less reactive. Although it's not governance, but it does spur governance for us. And that's what I'd like to talk about next, if I may. So we do have a governance process. And I think every organization, whether they be private sector or public sector, it typically has more need than resource capacity. We're no exception at revenue. But in order to manage through that, I think we put in a fairly formal governance process that helps our organization prioritize our IT activities and really helps us align with the business.
So could you for us non-tech savvy citizens. Can you help us understand what those three acronyms?
Sure, co-chair. ITIL is it's a industry best practice for IT. It's our information technology information library, or infrastructure library, actually. You're putting me on the spot now. I have to remember back to my my training years ago. PMI is a project management industry standard. It's a Project Management Institute, if I remember correctly. And Scrum is actually a word that is part of project management and agile development.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. So, great lead-in. So our processes are actually based in IT and project management best practices, and we just covered a couple of those right there. It does a good job of providing transparency for us, communication for us, and just generally informing the process. I think it definitely benefits the organization as a whole, and as we, you know, try and balance existing initiatives with new requests. And it does a pretty fair job at helping us dedicate precious resources in the right places.
So one of the issues, committee, that we're going to have to manage, and I don't know how long each of you will serve on this committee, but for a person who's been here a long time, I think it would be really helpful for us under the governance if, well, I don't want to get ahead of you. It'd be really helpful for us as you're taking on multiple projects for us to see, as it relates to the core system replacement, the non-Gentax application remediation, property valuation system, and processing center modernization, for us to get a calendar and a budget and what we can expect the expectation to be. And so when we head into round two of our conversation, to get those for those four items. Here are these four current IT status agency-wide projects, and let us know, here's when this thing's gonna be completed. It's gonna be completed for this dollar amount, and when it's done, this is what you can expect it's going to do. Would it be possible for us to get that worksheet?
Co-Chair Smith, absolutely.
Thank you. All right, is that all right, Mr. Co-Chair?
That's great, thank you.
Okay, so let's continue, please.
Okay, so, as I mentioned, we do have governance in place, and it is working well for us, but any good governance process matures with the business. And with the implementation of CSR, all but, our core system replacement, also known as CSR, with that all but implemented at this point, and understanding the pervasiveness of that tool set and the reliance on that tool set, it was a good opportunity to reevaluate our governance process. And to that end, we have developed a new governance process, which I think will greater align us with the business and provide more transparency and communication to the agency as a whole. So I would like to update you on some of the items that are agency-wide efforts that we're currently involved with. Just full disclosure, there's an underpinning theme across all four of these updates, and that's building business efficiencies with technologies that are sustainably supportable. So CSR, for the benefit of some of our newer members on this committee, it's our largest effort. It's our core system replacement project, and it's also, again, known as CSR. In its entirety, including our initiation phase and transitioning over to operation, it's roughly a six-year endeavor, and it replaces the major system tools that we use for tax administration. So we do have a technical team, a dedicated technical team, for our implementation of this product. They're located in their own space within our building, and they're focused on this full time. I believe this is one of the key fundamentals contributors to our success to date. I think if we didn't have these resources dedicated, I think we might be saying something less than stellar today about this project. So this is what's commonly referred to as a green screen. This comes out of our legacy environment, and this is what Gentax is replacing. And this is what our new screen looks like. It's a COT solution, or commercially available off-the-shelf solution, that is built on modern technology and has a modern interface. And it replaces not only the existing functionality we have in our legacy system, but it adds some new features like risk scoring and real-time processing. So as you can see by the slide up there, we successfully implemented rollouts 1 through 3 and met all relevant requirements without any customization, I might add. We're on schedule for early November with rollout 4, and don't anticipate any customizations with that rollout either. And the project as a whole is on budget.
Mr. Chikocher?
Representative Nierman.
Thanks. On this project, what was the total cost? Do you have the cost broken down between phases 1, 2, and 3 on that, just the implementation costs?
I don't. Co-Chair Manning, Representative Nierman, I don't have the exact cost right now, but I can tell you it's anywhere from 70 to 80 million at this point.
Okay. Can you get exact figures on that? And then also, what's the annual or biennial cost for to pay to the vendor to keep the project going? If you could just share that with the staff, that'd be great. So, thanks.
Co-Chair, Representative Nierman, noted.
Thanks.
So what's left? quite a lot, honestly. So as comprehensive of a system that Gentax is, there's still a significant number of applications that aren't going to be replaced or absorbed by this core system. We refer to these applications as our legacy environment. These legacy applications are at or nearing end of life, in some cases well into end of life even. And as a result, many of them have been deemed insecure because the vendors are no longer supporting and patching them. Additionally, quite a few of these applications are residing in legacy platforms, which presents its own set of challenges as well. But by far, our greatest risk here is our ability to find people still in the workforce that understand these obsolete technologies. We're also a buy versus build organization, so meaning we would rather get a COTS, a SaaS or cloud solution, if you're familiar with that terminology. But we've been largely unsuccessful in finding solutions that would fit our needs, mostly because of the unique nature by which we're required to do business at the Department of Revenue.
Question. We have this Oracle software, I think in tunes of like maybe $1 billion, I might be overpricing a little bit, that's sitting on the shelf. What are your thoughts on the application of that product versus I'm looking at a lot of different agencies that have their own software package or programming at the tune of maybe $100 million or $60 million, whatever, plus. And all of them are not producing or generating the results that they were intended. So what are your thoughts of how that software program, which we already own right now, and we got it in mind sense that we have to use it or we're going to lose it type program. What are your thoughts about the applicability of that software package integrating into your organization and in terms of, you know, outreach to other organizations?
Chair Manning, well, just point of clarification, Oracle is a company with a portfolio of literally thousands of applications. So That's a pretty extensive portfolio, if you will. In fact, they're their largest application portfolio provider in the world. So I think that's a broad question. I think in some regards it makes a lot of sense, and others maybe it doesn't fit all the requirements that a business may need.
Are you open to that conversation? You know, and see if that's. I think that a lot of times we have opportunities, and you know, they kind of get biased because you know we have a particular style or a particular culture that we want to maintain, mm-hmm. and sometimes not you, but yeah. You know, other organizations as well. You know, and we don't want to look at the possibility of something that we already have access to that could save us, the taxpayers, a lot of money.
Senator Manning, Co-Chair Manning, sorry. I agree. I mean, so as part of working through stage gate processes with the Office of the State CIO, we're required to evaluate those technologies prior to making any purchases.
Okay.
We're not looking to reinvent the wheel at the Department of Revenue. If there's a good product, we'll happily consider that.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to do some more follow-up later on with everybody, all the agencies and our IITs. I'm really interested on you know how we're going to move forward. I understand that there are some agencies that have purchased, put a lot of money into software packages and products stuff, and it's not producing you know what their expectations are. Not you, but you know overall the entire system how we're doing this thing. So, thank you,
Co-Chair. Looking forward to it. So our objective with this project is really to take those legacy applications and migrate them to modern technology stacks that are sustainably supportable and secure. So why do we need to change? We touched on that a little bit. We have recruiting issues. It's hard to find people that understand these older technologies. As you can see by looking at the slide, the next time this legislative body comes into a full session in 2019, 22% of my staff is eligible for retirement. That number goes up quite significantly to over 30%, in fact, if you look at the five-year trend. We talked about...
So what's the plan on that?
Yeah.
Well, Co-Chair Smith?
How do we attract that 24, 25-year-old young professional? How do we get her to come work for the state?
Co-Chair Smith, I think that's a great question. I can tell you, working with our partners at DAS, we've been doing a lot of, thinking about that, for lack of a better word. It is a challenge. I think the state as a whole could probably be a little bit more attentive to some of the competitiveness that some of our private sector people are pursuing, and not being necessarily as confined by the rigid nature that we're used to.
So is the department, John, help me on this, that special committee that DAS has, where each agency has a representative on it?
The Enterprise Leadership
Team? Yeah, Enterprise Leadership. Is Department of Revenue part of that? You are?
Yep.
To me, it would seem like the Enterprise Leadership group ought to have that conversation, because we're hearing this theme in all of our conversations, and at some point it would seem like someone ought to raise that issue and bring back to us some solutions on how to deal with that. Yeah, Representative.
And I just want to chime in with total agreement. We actually asked Revenue a couple days ago to bring us that number for the entire department, because it's a really important issue. This is specialized work, and as we're seeing a mass exodus out the retirement system, what the heck are we going to do? I think it's worth a bigger conversation, for sure.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, and just to kind of tag team with Representative Marsh, and this is not DOR, but in a larger context, it is. You know, when we do or have the ability to attract younger workers that fit this the requirements or the needs of the agency and stuff. Historically, I think that there is a problem with retention. So I don't know if it's cultural based, or I don't know if it's old ways of thinking, But if we're going to build that next workforce, then we need to develop a culture that's designed to accept people, and not only that, is to mentor them to get them to the next, retain them, because each time we let one go, then it costs us extra money because we have to start the process all over again. But you already know that, and I guess is this, I should be waiting for DAS to come in, so.
Good comments.
Agreed. Co-chairs, if I may just follow up, I think just to clarify, I think our bigger challenge here, and we certainly do have recruiting challenges at all levels, but specifically our biggest challenge is around people, for me specifically, people find that are still understanding the obsolete technologies that are in the workforce. Many of them are retired. I joke sometimes that anybody that still knows these technologies is already working at the Department of Revenue and is in that 22%. So that's our bigger challenge. But we do have a systemic issue here at the state that probably needs to be addressed at a broader level.
Thank you.
So, and just one last point here. Our customer support here is not where we'd like it to be. So we're hoping we can do something about that. So this is a pretty busy slide, I admit. It's a graphical representation of our project plan, and I'll be the first to tell you we're behind schedule on this effort. In large part, we've had some unanticipated operational issues that we had to prioritize. I think Ms. Waite spoke to some of those, actually, about the processing center. Our estimate on how quickly some of our staff could adapt to the new architecture was a little optimistic. But again, our biggest delay comes with our recruiting challenges. So Ms. Waite just gave you a fairly informative summary of the processing center, so I won't say too much more about it other than say it's a very laborious process right now. Again, we're supporting obsolete technologies. And when we're having to support this old hardware that the company that produced the hardware is no longer in business, we find ourselves literally sourcing pieces from the internet like eBay and getting them shipped from very interesting parts of the world. So. And the theme continues. We're looking to make something that's a little bit more sustainably supportable and efficient. So this is our current plan, what we're working towards. We're hoping we can issue an RFP in 2017 and have a contract awarded in October, and then start this project formally with a vendor on board in December.
Can we go back one slide?
Absolutely.
And I'm about to show my ignorance here. Didn't we approve funding for significant portions of this in the last biennium?
Co-Chair Smith,
Co-Chair Smith, members of the committee. So there was $1.3 million committed out of the ASD operations budget for this, and you will see in the governor's budget that we have, we did put in a POP for $753,000 of that $1.3 to be restored because it was phased out of our budget.
Okay.
And so the $753,000 is really associated with any maintenance and support costs that will be moving into the contingency for 17-19.
Okay. I apologize. Yeah, please, John.
I think it's important to note for the committee that the project was never formally brought before the legislature or approved by the legislature. And so the agency pursued this project with its internal resources. Mm-hmm. When the project started having difficulty, the agency reported to the legislature, and the legislature directed that the one-time costs associated with the project be phased out of the budget, which the agency has done. So
right.
There's a little more of a history here with this particular project.
Thank you. All right.
So here's the steps we've taken thus far. The exception being the last bullet, we're working on third-party QA. We actually haven't secured any vendor for that service yet. Back in January, we completed an RFI, and as Ms. Waite mentioned, we got Stage Gate 1 approval back in February. So property valuation program, again, being the last guy up this week, Mr. Humphrey spoke about this effort yesterday, so I won't spend a lot of time talking about that. Again, the theme, aging technologies, finding people that can support it. We have an additional challenge here, though. The solution we have for property tax today resides with very disparate technologies. So there are a bunch of applications that are woven together. All these applications, or the vast majority of them, are in end of life. And the data doesn't necessarily translate from one program to the other in that solution, meaning that in some cases, people have to enter the same information multiple times. So again, we're a buy versus build shop. We're available. That's what we want to do here. We're hoping to get a single pane of glass out of this. Again, we want to build some efficiencies and have a technology stack that is supportable for the long term. So we're in our vendor selection process. We're in round 3 of 5. We anticipate that all 5 rounds are going to be completed by the end of April. We did get StageGate approval 1 and 2 as well. And we're hoping to get a go-live date of fall, winter of 2018 here.
Can we go back really quick to page 36, slide 36?
Sure.
So on that timeline, how is that going to integrate in with your tax processing season? And if we begin phase one, if we award in October, begin phase one in December, are we going to miss the 2018 season as well?
Coach Smith, yes, more than likely.
So we're several years out still.
Coach Smith, yes.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Okay. All right, so we're to the last slide.
To the general Q&A, yes.
Any questions for our guest today? All right. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Let me share with the committee and with the director and with all here. It's not a great reelection strategy to work hard to help the Department of Revenue. Okay. You just don't put it on a door hanger as you're going door to door that you're helping the Department of Revenue. But I would share with you, there's probably no more important agency in the state of Oregon than the Department of Revenue. You are the folks that bring the dollars in, that help to disperse it throughout all the important programs we have. And so I've now been chair of this committee for 3 terms, been on here forever. And I think it's healthy once in a while for us as a committee to just dive in and to take a look at how things are going. And I think this is one of those committees where, because of the importance of everything you're doing, that we're going to work closely with you over the next 3, 4, 5 months, hopefully not longer than 5 months, because we really want you folks to do well. We want to make sure things go smoothly. But just know you're going to get lots of extra attention from us. So we're glad you're here today.
Thank you.
So, all right. Anything else for the good of the order? John, anything we need to be thinking about?
No, co-chair. I'll try to get it right this time. Tomorrow, Patrick will give the overview of the CFO's office, will give an overview of the governor's budget, and there will be public testimony on the agency, likely to finish early tomorrow, and then we're off for the week.
So, all right.
Thank
perfect.
You.
Perfect. Michael, anything? We're good?
Yes, sir. We're good.
All right. Committee members, we're going to adjourn for the day. Shot across.